This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 113. This episode was previously recorded. Can a comic collector of 20 plus years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
Well, thank you, Announcer Bot, and welcome to How I Got My Wife to Read Comics. I'm Mark.
And I am Mindy. Just as a reminder, we have a Facebook fan page. Just search for How I Got My Wife to Read Comics. More than welcome to leave comments or questions or suggestions or recommendations there. You can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com for the feed, other SF podcasts, and blogs, or go to iTunes and search for How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, where you can leave us a review.
And you can contact us through the website, Facebook, or email, sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Finally, you can call the voice line at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP. This is a previously recorded episode, doing this a little in advance.
Because I am out of town.
Exactly.
As we speak.
Right.
No, not really as
well,
we
not
speak.
As we speak. Then you wouldn't be here.
As you listen.
Right. And since this year is DC's 75th anniversary, started in 1935, I thought this would be a good time to talk about the very birth of DC Comics. How did it come to be in the first place?
It is old.
Indeed. And so we're talking about what is referred to as the Platinum Age.
This really?
Is, yes.
I hadn't heard that before.
Pre-action number one is considered the Platinum Age. And Platinum Age basically goes all the way back to Little Nemo in Slumberland in around the turn of the century, which is kind of the proto-comic book. But DC starts with the pulps. And the pulps are cheap novels on really low quality newsprint to the point where they're like chunks of wood pulp in them, and what they're called the pulps. And they were genre related mysteries, some early sci-fi. A lot of the early sci-fi were out there as pulps, romances, a lot of different genres. And then you had the Sunday funnies. So you had these color inserts, just like you have today in, you know, what the old people call newspapers. And so the problem was, what do you do with those color presses the rest of the week? Because nobody was paying for color ads, not that they really did them in newspapers. So you had these color presses the rest of the time were sitting there. They weren't good for like magazines because they weren't high enough quality.
Right. And they would just print on newsprint.
Exactly. So we start with Harry Donenfeld. He and his three older brothers run Martin Press around World War I. And Harry joins when his own clothing store fails in the early 1920s. So Harry's not necessarily a great businessman, but he's great at getting contacts, especially in disreputable areas like organized crime. And so he ends up pushing this press company into things such as sex pulps. So this is like early pornography, and ends up also pushing his brothers out of the business. And so he ends up running this company that's kind of doing some disreputable work. We also meet Major Malcolm Wheeler Nicholson. He fought in World War I. He had what was considered a very colorful military career. By some accounts, he kind of puffed up his reputation, and he ended up basically getting dishonorably discharged at one point, and he ends up writing these pulp stories about the war. Wheeler Nicholson, sees these attempts that are coming out. There was one called Famous Funnies. And these are essentially just reprints of the Daily and the Sunday Funnies. There was no new material, just reprints. And a lot of this was giveaways from like shoe stores or department stores or restaurants. You don't really see this much anymore, but every once in a while you see like restaurants still doing this.
Like comics? Or,
yeah.
Yeah.
You see it, but it was much more prevalent there. But they're all just giveaways.
Well, they used to give away a lot more things at stores.
True.
You know, with the promotional things.
True. He sees this stuff and he's like, well, I'd like to try to do this too and see if I can make some money off of this. But he can't get any rights to the existing strips. They're all basically tied up. The newspaper syndicates have sold all their rights. And so there's nothing existing he can get the rights to. So he says, okay, fine. I'll do my own work with original artwork and original characters. And so what is now considered to be the first, in some ways, the first, not necessarily the first comic book, but certainly the first, what will later be considered a DC work. New Fun, the big comics magazine, 1935. It's 10 by 15 inches, kind of similar to that Wednesday Comics that came out last year. It's got a cardstock cover, and it's all original work. It's a lot of funny animal type stuff and stuff that's probably kind of ripoffs of the Sunday funnies at the time, but it is technically original work.
Yes.
And it's successful enough to continue and make additional issues. Issue 6 contains the first work, professional work, done by Siegel and Shuster, who, of course, creators of Superman. He also creates New Comics, 1935. Not New Fun, but New Comics. And this is considered by many to be the first comic book. It later would become New Adventure Comics, and later still would become Adventure Comics.
Which is what we still have today, Adventure Comics?
The Adventure Comics that just came back out again, it traces lineage back to the first DC comic book. So, brought out New Comics. He also brought out Detective Comics, 1937. And this was characters like Ching Lung, kind of like the Fu Manchu character. Also, the first appearance of Slam Bradley, Siegel and Shuster character who... we just saw a few years ago in the Catwoman comic, Speed Saunders, who is a relative of both Shiera Saunders and Kendra Saunders, the various Hawk girls.
Okay.
And, of course, Detective Comics is best known for the first appearance of Batman, issue number 27. But by that point, Nicholson was gone from this whole company. Because he really couldn't make it work financially, because it's in the middle of the Depression. People don't want to buy these, whatever these funnies things are. And he owed money to his printer. His printer was Harry Donenfeld. So Donenfeld ended up saying, look, if we go in as a partnership on this, we'll continue doing this and we'll work out your debt. So he brought Nicholson on as a partner. He also brought in Jack Leibowitz, who is Donenfeld's lawyer, as another partner. Within a year, Nicholson was forced out of the company. And Donenfeld basically took the whole thing over. Now, according to one history of the comic book industry, whether this is true or not, I don't know, but I'm going to say this is what might have happened. Supposedly, Donenfeld sent Nicholson and his family on a Cuban vacation to come up with new ideas for comic books. And when they returned, the company locks had been changed. And Donenfeld sued Nicholson for non-payment of whatever fees he was supposed to pay. And a judge who was Donenfeld's buddy, like a crooked judge, okayed the whole thing. So that Nicholson ended up being given a small percentage of More Fun Comics, which was kind of the successor to New Fun. And he was told, go away. And that was basically the end of Nicholson's involvement with the company. Now, of course, this ended up all happening in 1938, which is kind of a significant year for DC Comics. So a few months later, a certain character showed up. They kind of changed everything. So Nicholson got cut out just at the right time. So Donenfeld was very much a risk taker. The fact that he was involved, you know, in somewhat in organized crime and things like that and kind of sketchy concepts. But Leibowitz was far more cautious. So it was a good pairing of the two. You know, they'd kind of even each other out running the business. And Leibowitz ended up creating Action Comics, 1938. It was, of course, first appearance of Superman. And he later oversaw the work of the DC characters, especially Superman, into movies and TV. He was responsible for the George Reeves Adventures of Superman series in the 50s. He was responsible for the as I understand it, the radio series, the Fleischer cartoons, the, you know, I mean, all across the board, he was the guy who said we could use these in other mediums. And he was, you know, he's like the first synergist, as it were. And Jack Liebowitz ended up on the Warner Communications board when DC was bought by Warner. And he didn't leave the board until 1991, when he, in fact, was 91 years old. He was born in 1900. He died in 2000.
Wow.
So everything you see now in terms of merchandising, and frankly, merchandising, not just of superheroes, but probably any fictional character, comes back to this guy. Comes back to this Jack Liebowitz. Now, I also want to note, there's this other peripheral character, Max Gaines. He's the guy who created the famous Funnies, which was the reprints of the old Sunday Funny comics.
Mm-hmm.
He comes to Donenfeld in the late 30s and says, well, I want to get involved in this, you know, creating new characters. And he partners with Liebowitz on this company, All American Comics, which ends up being a sister firm to DC. Now, what's interesting here is that many of what we consider to be the major DC characters came from All American Comics, including Wonder Woman, Flash, Green Lantern, as well as Atom, Red Tornado, and Dr. Midnight. All came from this sister company and were not DC characters to begin with.
Now, back then, was there any consideration of the fact that the world that had Superman in it also had other characters in it, or was it pretty much just...
Well, it wasn't until this stuff with All American got going
that they were said other superheroes.
There were other superheroes. There was, you know, DC had Superman and Batman and Starman and, you know, a few others. The idea of bringing them together and having what it became All-Star Comics and the Justice Society kind of comes out of All American.
Okay.
And so Max Gaines leaves the company in 1946 because he's not really happy with how things are going, and he feels that comic books can be used for greater purposes than just entertainment, and so he creates Educational Comics, EC, and they're best known for picture stories from the Bible. Donenfeld buys out All American Comics sometime around 1946 when Gaines leaves, and merges it with DC. And so it becomes one company at that point. And so all the characters that you know about now, that's when they officially all become DC characters. Max Gaines dies a year later in a boating accident. And his son, William, at age 25, takes over EC, which he renames Entertaining Comics.
Which I imagine goes over much better with the general public.
Exactly. And it does, to the point where this is where Tales from the Crypt, Two-Fisted Tales, Weird Science, all come out of this EC. And this is where the whole Wortham Crusade and the Comic Code Authority all come from, because some of the stuff that was going on in the EC titles. Not that EC was the only one doing it, but but EC was always the poster child for, terrible things are going on in comic books. When the whole Wortham Crusade and all this occurs, and the Senate hearings occur in the 50s about how terrible comic books are, William Gaines doesn't want to have anything to do with this. He doesn't want to have anything to do with the Comics Code Authority. So he says, fine, I'm not making a comic book. I'm making a magazine. And I think I'll call it Mad Magazine. And so this all flows out of the early years of DC. And then, ironically, later, DC and Warner buy Mad Magazine. DC spends much of the 50s and early 60s buying out the other companies.
Just acquiring rights and characters.
Characters left and right. And also, they ended up buying the printing press company that was being used by Marvel Comics. And so for a long period, probably from the late 40s until around 1960, when Marvel finally got its act together and the huge era of Marvel began, with Spider-Man and Avengers and Fantastic Four and the Hulk and Iron Man and all that. Until that point, DC, if they had chosen to do so, could have shut Marvel down, literally, because they owned at that point all the printing presses that would make comic books.
Well, that was nice of them not to do so.
Yeah. Now, maybe in retrospect, they wouldn't have been... from a business standpoint, maybe you could have done something about it, but they didn't.
Now, I would just like to say that I find this very interesting, but I want to recommend a book that really is a novel,
mm-hmm.
but it does talk
yes.
about the early comic
yes.
book industry, and that's The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay
mm-hmm.
by Michael Chabon. And it talks about these two characters who create a comic much like Superman.
The Escapist.
Yes. And it's a very interesting look at some things that are that did happen in the early comic book industry.
Because they're two fictional characters, but they're in the midst of the real-life comic book industry.
Right.
So you see some of these early characters and their interactions with them. Yeah,
yes.
It is a great book. So maybe at some later date I'll talk about the beginnings of the Golden Age. But that basically takes you through the very early years of DC Comics.
Yes.
So,
the Platinum Age.
The Platinum Age. And so I want to remind you about that Facebook fan page. You can search for How I Got My Wife to Read Comics. You can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com for the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, or you can go to iTunes and search for How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, and please, please leave us a review.
You can contact us through the website, Facebook, or email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com or call our voice line at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Good night.
Bye-bye.